Good evening. Welcome to the Just Sleep podcast. I'm Tayshia, your host. Every week, I will read you an old story to help you relax, put the stressful day behind you, and drift off to sleep. Occasionally, we will run ads in order to cover the costs of the production of the podcast. Rest assured, there will be no ads during or after the story. If you prefer an ad-free and intro-free show, you can join Just Sleep Premium. Visit justsleeppodcast.com/support for more information.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Tonight, I will be reading The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. So lie down, close your eyes, and let me read you a story. 1. One morning, as Gregor Samsa was waking up from anxious dreams, he discovered that in his bed, he had been changed into a monstrous, verminous bug. He lay on his armor-hard back and saw, as he lifted his head up a little, his brown, arched abdomen divided up into rigid, bowl-like sections. His blanket, perched high on this belly, could hardly stay in place. It seemed about to slide off completely. His numerous legs, pitifully thin in comparison to the rest of his circumference, flickered helplessly before his eyes. What's happened to me? He thought. It was no dream. His room, a proper room for a human being, only somewhat too small, lay quietly between the four well-known walls. Above the table, on which an unpacked collection of sample cloth goods was spread out, Samsa was a traveling salesman, hung the picture which he had cut out of an illustrated magazine a long while ago and set in a pretty gilt frame. It was a picture of a woman with a fur hat and a fur boa. She sat erect, lifting up in the direction of the viewer a solid fur muff into which her entire forearm had disappeared. Gregor's glance then turned to the window. The dreary weather, you could hear the raindrops falling on the metal window ledge, made him quite melancholy. Why don't I keep sleeping for a little while longer and forget all this foolishness, he thought. But this was entirely impractical. for he was used to sleeping on his right side, and in his present state, he could not get himself into this position. No matter how hard he threw himself onto his right side, he always rolled onto his back again. He must have tried it 100 times, closing his eyes so that he would not have to see the wriggling legs, and gave up only when he began to feel a light, dull pain in his side that he had never felt before. Oh God, he thought, what a demanding job I've chosen. Day in, day out on the road. The stresses of selling are much greater than the actual work going on at head office. And in addition to that, I still have to cope with the problems of traveling, the worries about train connections, irregular bad food, temporary and constantly changing human interactions, which never come from the heart. To hell with it all. He felt a slight itching on the top of his abdomen. He slowly pushed himself on his back closer to the bedpost so that he could lift his head more easily, and found the itchy part, which was entirely covered with small white spots. He did not know what to make of them and wanted to feel the place with a leg, but he retracted it immediately, for the contact felt like a cold shower all over him. He slid back again into his earlier position. This getting up early, he thought, makes a man quite idiotic. A man must have his sleep. Other traveling salesmen live like harem women. For instance, when I come back to the inn during the course of the morning to write up the necessary orders, these gentlemen are just sitting down to breakfast. If I were to try that with my boss, I'd be fired on the spot. Still, who knows whether that mightn't be really good for me. If it weren't for my parents' sake, I'd have quit ages ago. I would have gone to the boss and told him just what I think from the bottom of my heart. He would have fallen right off his desk. How weird it is for him to sit up at that desk, talking down to the employee from way up there. And even more weird because the boss has trouble hearing, so the employee has to step up quite close to him. Anyway, I haven't completely given up that hope yet. Once I've gotten together the money to pay off my parents' debt to him, that should take another 5 or 6 years. I'll do it for sure. Then I'll make my big break. In any case, right now, I have to get up. My train leaves at 5 o'clock. He looked over at the alarm clock ticking away on the chest of drawers. Good God, he thought. It was 6:30, and the hands were going quietly on. It was even past the half hour, already nearly 2:45. Could the alarm have failed to ring? You could see from the bed that it was properly set for 4 o'clock. Certainly it had rung. Yes, but was it possible to sleep peacefully through that noise which made the furniture shake? Now it is true he had not slept peacefully, but evidently he had slept all the more deeply. Still, what should he do now? The next train left at 7 o'clock. To catch that one, he would have to go in a mad rush. The case of samples was not packed up yet, and he really did not feel particularly bright and lively. And even if he caught the train, there was no avoiding a blow-up with the boss. The firm's errand boy would have waited for the 5 o'clock train and reported the news of his absence long ago. He was the boss's minion, without backbone or intelligence. Well then, what if he reported in sick? But that would be extremely embarrassing and suspicious, because during his 5 years' service, Gregor had not been sick even once. The boss would certainly come with the doctor from the health insurance company and would reproach his parents for their lazy son and cut short all obligations by asking for the insurance doctor's comments. For this doctor, everyone was completely healthy and really lazy about work. And besides, would the doctor in this case be totally wrong? apart from a really excessive drowsiness after the long sleep. Gregor, in fact, felt quite well, and he even had a really strong appetite. As he was thinking all this over in the greatest haste, without being able to make the decision to get out of bed, the alarm clock was indicating exactly 7:15. There was a cautious knock on the door by the head of the bed. "Gregor," a voice called. It was his mother. "It's 7:15. Don't you want to be on your way?" That soft voice. Gregor was startled when he heard his own voice answering. It was clearly and unmistakably the voice he'd had before, but in it was intermingled, as if from below, an irrepressible, painful squeaking, which left the words positively distinct, only in the first moment, and distorted them in the reverberation, so that anyone listening did not know if he had heard correctly. Gregor wanted to answer in detail and explain everything, but in these circumstances he confined himself to saying, "Yes, yes, thank you, Mother. I'm getting up right away." Because of the wooden door, the change in Gregor's voice was not really noticeable outside, so his mother calmed down with this explanation and shuffled off. However, as a result of the short conversation, the other family members became aware that Gregor was unexpectedly still at home, and already his father was knocking on one side door weakly, but with his fist. "Gregor, Gregor," he called out. "What's going on?" And after a short while, he urged him on again, in a deeper voice. "Gregor, Gregor." At the other side door, however, his sister lightly knocked. "Gregor, are you all right? Do you need anything?" Gregor directed answers in both directions. "I'll be ready right away." He made an effort with the most careful articulation and inserted long pauses between the individual words to remove everything remarkable from his voice. His father turned back to his breakfast. However, his sister whispered, "Gregor, open the door, I beg you." Gregor had no intention of opening the door. He congratulated himself on his precaution, acquired from traveling, of locking all doors during the night, even at home. First, he wanted to stand up quietly and undisturbed, get dressed, above all have breakfast, and only then consider further action. For, he noticed this clearly, by thinking things over in bed, he would not reach a reasonable conclusion. He remembered that before now in bed, he had often felt some light pain or other, which was perhaps the result of an awkward lying position, and which later, once he stood up, turned out to be purely imaginary, and he was eager to see how his present fantasies would gradually dissipate. That the change in his voice was nothing other than the onset of a cold, an occupational illness of commercial travelers, of that he had not the slightest doubt. It was very easy to throw aside the blanket. He needed only to push his stomach out a little, and it fell by itself. But to continue was difficult, particularly because he was so unusually wide. He needed arms and hands to push himself upright. Instead of these, however, he had only many small limbs, which were incessantly moving, with very different motions, and which, in addition, he was unable to control. If he wanted to bend one of them, then it was the first to extend itself, and if he finally succeeded doing what he wanted with this limb, in the meantime, all the others, as if left free, moved around in an excessively painful agitation. "But I must not stay in bed uselessly," said Gregor to himself. At first, he wanted to get out of bed with the lower part of his body. But this lower part, which, by the way, he had not yet looked at, and which he also could not picture clearly, proved itself too difficult to move. The attempt went so slowly. When, having become almost frantic, he finally hurled himself forward with all his force. And without thinking, he chose his direction incorrectly and hit the lower bedpost hard. The violent pain he felt revealed to him that the lower part of his body was at the moment probably the most sensitive. Thus he tried to get his upper body out of the bed first, and he turned his head carefully toward the edge of the bed. He managed to do this easily, and in spite of its width and weight, his body mass at last slowly followed the turning of his head. But as he finally extended his head beyond the bed into the air, he became anxious about moving forward any further in this manner. For if he allowed himself eventually to fall by this process, it would really take a miracle to prevent his head from getting injured. And at all costs, he must not lose consciousness right now. He preferred to remain in bed. But after a similar effort, it was no different. He lay there again, sighing as before, and once again saw his small limbs fighting one another, if anything even worse than earlier, and did not see any chance of imposing quiet and order on this arbitrary movement. He told himself again that he could not possibly remain in bed, and that it might be the most reasonable thing to sacrifice everything if there was even the slightest hope of getting himself out of bed in the process. At the same time, however, he did not forget to keep reminding himself periodically of the fact that calm, indeed the calmest reflection, might be much better than confused decisions. At such moments, he directed his gaze as precisely as he could toward the window. But unfortunately, a glance at the morning mist, which concealed even the other side of the narrow street, offered little to make him more confident or cheerful. "It's already 7 o'clock," he told himself at the latest sounds from the alarm clock. "Already 7 o'clock, and still such a fog." And for a little while longer, he lay quietly with weak breathing, as if perhaps waiting for normal and natural conditions to reemerge out of the complete stillness. But then he said to himself, "Before it strikes 7:15, whatever happens, I must be completely out of bed. Besides, by then someone from the office will arrive to inquire about me, because the office will open before 7 o'clock. And he made an effort then to rock his entire body length out of the bed with a uniform motion. If he let himself fall out of bed in this way, his head, which in the course of the fall he intended to lift up sharply, would probably remain uninjured. His back seemed to be hard. Nothing would really happen to that as a result of the fall onto the carpet. His greatest reservation was a worry about the loud noise which the fall must create, and which would presumably arouse, if not frighten, then at least concern, on the other side of the door. Nevertheless, he had to take that chance. As Gregor was already in the process of lifting himself half out of bed, the new method was more of a game than an effort. He needed only to rock with a series of jerks. It struck him how easy all this would be if someone were to come to his aid. Two strong people, he thought of his father and the servant girl, would have been quite sufficient. They would only have had to push their arms under his arched back to get him out of bed, to bend down with their load, and then merely to exercise patience so that he could complete the flip onto the floor, where his diminutive legs would then, he hoped, acquire a purpose. Now, quite apart from the fact that the doors were locked, should he really call out for help? In spite of all his distress, he was unable to suppress a smile at this idea. He had already got to the point where, by rocking more strongly, he was making it very difficult for himself to keep his balance, and very soon he would finally have to make a final decision, for in 5 minutes it would be 7:15. Then there was a ring at the door of the apartment. That's someone from the office, he told himself, and he almost froze while his small limbs only danced around all the faster. For one moment, everything remained still. "They aren't opening the door," Gregor said to himself, caught up in some absurd hope. But of course then, as usual, the servant girl with her firm tread went to the door and opened it. Gregor needed to hear only the first word of the visitor's greeting to recognize immediately who it was. The manager himself. Why was Gregor the only one condemned to work in a firm where the slightest lapse would attract the greatest suspicion? Were all the employees collectively, one and all, scoundrels? Among them was there then no truly devoted person who, if he failed to use just a couple of hours in the morning for office work, would become abnormal from pangs of conscience and really be in no state to get out of bed? Would it not have been enough to let an apprentice make inquiries, if such questioning was even necessary? Must the manager come himself? And in the process, must it be demonstrated to the entire innocent family that the investigation of this suspicious circumstance could be entrusted only to the intelligence of the manager? More as a consequence of the excited state in which this idea put Gregor than as a result of an actual decision, he swung himself with all his might out of the bed. There was a loud thud, but not a real crash. The fall was absorbed somewhat by the carpet, and in addition, his back was more elastic than Gregor had thought. For that reason, the dull noise was not quite so conspicuous. But he had not held his head up with sufficient care and had bumped it. He turned his head, irritated and in pain, and rubbed it on the carpet. "Something has fallen in there," said the manager in the next room on the left. Gregor tried to imagine to himself whether anything similar to what was happening to him today could have also happened at some point to the manager. At least one had to concede the possibility of such a thing. However, as if to give a rough answer to this question, the manager now, with a squeak of his polished boots, took a few determined steps in the next room. From the neighboring room on the right, the sister was whispering to inform Gregor. "Gregor, the manager is here." "I know," said Gregor to himself, but he did not dare make his voice loud enough so that his sister could hear. "Gregor," his father now said from the neighboring room on the left, "Mr. Manager has come and is asking why you did not leave on the early train. We don't know what we should tell him. Besides, he also wants to speak to you personally, so please open the door. He will be good enough to forgive the mess in your room." In the middle of all this, the manager called out in a friendly way, "Good morning, Mr. Samsa." "He is not well," said his mother to the manager, while his father was still talking at the door. "He's not well, believe me, Mr. Manager. Otherwise, how would Gregor miss a train? The young man has nothing in his head except business. I'm almost angry that he never goes out in the evening. Right now, he's been in the city 8 days, but he's been at home every evening. He sits here with us at the table and reads the newspaper quietly or studies his travel schedules. Working with wood can be quite a diversion for him. He busies himself with fretwork. For instance, he cut out a small frame over the course of 2 or 3 evenings. You'd be amazed how pretty it is. It's hanging right inside the room. You'll see it immediately as soon as Gregor opens the door. Anyway, I'm happy that you're here, Mr. Manager. By ourselves, we would never have made Gregor open the door. He's so stubborn, and he's certainly not well, although he denied that this morning." "I'm coming right away," said Gregor slowly and deliberately, without moving, so as not to lose one word of the conversation. "My dear lady, I cannot explain it to myself in any other way," said the manager. "I hope it is nothing serious. On the other hand, I must also say that we business people, luckily or unluckily, however one looks at it, very often simply have to overcome a slight indisposition for business reasons. "So can Mr. Manager come in to see you now?" asked his father impatiently, and knocked once again on the door. "No," said Gregor. In the neighbouring room on the left, an awkward stillness descended. In the neighbouring room on the right, the sister began to sob. Why did his sister not go to the others? She had probably just got up out of bed now, and not even started to get dressed yet. Then why was she crying? Because he was not getting up and letting the manager in? Because he was in danger of losing his position? And because then his boss would badger his parents once again with the old demands? Those were probably unnecessary worries right now. Gregor was still here and was not thinking at all about abandoning his family. At the moment, he was lying right here on the carpet, and no one who knew about his condition would have seriously demanded that he let the manager in. In any case, Gregor would not be casually dismissed right away because of this small discourtesy, for which he would find an easy and suitable excuse later on. It seemed to Gregor that it would be far more reasonable to leave him in peace at the moment, instead of disturbing him with crying and exhortations. But the others were distressed by their uncertainty, which excused their behaviour. "Mr. Samsa," the manager was now shouting, his voice raised, "what's the matter? You're barricading yourself there in your room, answering with only a yes and a no. You're making serious and unnecessary trouble for your parents. And you're neglecting, I mention this only incidentally, your commercial duties in a truly unheard-of manner. I'm speaking here in the name of your parents and your employer, and I am requesting you in all seriousness to give an immediate and clear explanation. I am amazed. I thought I knew you as a calm, reasonable person, and now you appear suddenly to want to start parading around in strange moods. The chief indicated to me earlier this very day a possible explanation for your neglect. It concerned the collection of cash entrusted to you a short while ago. But in truth, I almost gave him my word of honour that this explanation could not be correct. However, now I see here your unimaginable pig-headedness, and I am totally losing any desire to speak up for you in the slightest. And your position is not at all the most secure. Originally, I intended to mention all this to you privately, but since you are letting me waste my time here uselessly, I don't know why the matter shouldn't come to the attention of your parents as well. Your productivity has been very unsatisfactory lately. Of course, it's not the time of year to produce exceptional sales, we recognize that, but a time of year for producing no sales, there is no such thing at all, Mr. Samsa, and such a thing must not be permitted. But Mr. Manager, called Gregor, beside himself, and in his agitation forgetting everything else, I'm opening the door immediately, this very moment. A slight indisposition, a dizzy spell, has prevented me from getting up. I'm still lying in bed right now, but I'm quite refreshed once again. I'm in the midst of getting out of bed. Just have patience for a short moment. Things are not yet going as well as I thought, but things are all right with me. How suddenly this can overcome someone. Only yesterday evening everything was fine with me. My parents certainly know that. Actually, just yesterday evening I had a small premonition. People must have seen that in me. Why did I not report that to the office? But people always think that they'll get over sickness without having to stay at home. Mr. Manager, take it easy on my parents. There's really no basis for the criticisms which you are now making against me. Nobody has said a word to me about any of this. Perhaps you have not seen the latest orders I sent in. Besides, I'm setting out on a new sales trip on the 8 o'clock train. The few hours' rest have made me stronger. Mr. Manager, there's no need for you to wait here any longer. I'll be at the office in person right away. Please have the goodness to report that and to convey my respects to the chief. While Gregor was quickly blurting all this out, hardly aware of what he was saying, he had moved close to the chest of drawers without effort, probably as a result of the practice he had already had in bed, and now was trying to raise himself up on it. Actually, he wanted to open the door. He really wanted to let himself be seen and to speak with the manager. He was keen to see what the others, who had been asking about him just now, would say when they saw him. If they were startled, then Gregor would no longer be burdened by responsibility and could be calm. But if they accepted everything quietly, then he would have no reason to get excited. If he got a move on, he could really be at the station around 8 o'clock. At first, he slid down a few times on the smooth chest of drawers, but at last he gave himself a final swing and stood upright there. He was no longer at all aware of the pains in his lower body, no matter how they might still sting. Now he let himself fall against the back of a nearby chair, on the edge of which he braced himself with his small limbs. By doing this, he gained control over himself and kept quiet, for he could now hear the manager. "Did you understand even a single word?" the manager asked the parents. "Is he playing the fool with us?" "For God's sake," cried the mother, already in tears. "Perhaps he's very ill, and we're upsetting him." "Greta, Greta," she yelled. "Mother," called the sister from the other side. They were making themselves understood through Gregor's room. "You must go to the doctor right away. Gregor is sick. Hurry to the doctor. Did you hear Gregor speak just now?" "That was an animal's voice," said the manager, remarkably quiet in comparison to the mother's cries. "Anna, Anna," yelled the father through the hall into the kitchen, clapping his hands. "Fetch a locksmith right away." The two young women were already running through the hall with swishing skirts. How had his sister dressed herself so quickly? And pulling open the doors of the apartment, you couldn't hear the doors closing at all. They probably had left them open, as is customary in an apartment where a great misfortune has taken place. However, Gregor had become much calmer. All right, people did not understand his words anymore, although they seemed clear enough to him, clearer than previously, perhaps because his ears had gotten used to them. But at least people now thought that things were not completely all right with him and were prepared to help him. The confidence and assurance with which the first arrangements had been carried out made him feel good. He felt himself included once again in the circle of humanity and was expecting from both the doctor and the locksmith, without differentiating between them with any real precision, splendid and surprising results. In order to make his voice as clear as possible for the critical conversation which was imminent, he coughed a little. He certainly took care to do this in a really subdued way, since it was possible that even this noise would sound like something different from a human clearing of the throat. He no longer trusted his judgment. Meanwhile, in the next room, it had become very quiet. Perhaps his parents were sitting with the manager at the table, whispering. Perhaps they were all leaning against the door and listening. Gregor pushed himself slowly towards the door with the help of the easy chair. Then he let go of the chair, threw himself against the door, held himself upright against it. The balls of his tiny limbs had a little sticky stuff on them, and rested there momentarily from his exertion. Next, he made an effort to turn the key in the lock with his mouth. Unfortunately, it seemed that he had no real teeth. How then was he to grab hold of the key? But to make up for that, his jaws were naturally very strong. With their help, he managed to get the key actually moving. He did not notice that he was obviously inflicting some damage on himself. A brown fluid was coming out of his mouth, flowing over the key and dripping onto the floor. "Just listen," said the manager in the next room. "He's turning the key." For Gregor, that was a great encouragement. But they should all have called out to him, including his father and mother. "Come on, Gregor, they should have shouted. Keep going. Keep working on the lock. Imagining that all his efforts were being followed with suspense, he bit down on the key unthinkingly with all the force he could muster. As the key turned more, he danced around the lock. Now he was holding himself upright only with his mouth, and he had to alternate as necessary between hanging onto the key and pressing it down again with the whole weight of his body. The quite distinct click of the lock as it finally snapped open really woke Gregor up. Breathing heavily, he said to himself, "So I didn't need the locksmith," and he set his head against the door handle to open the door completely. Because he'd had to open the door in this way, it swung open really wide without him yet being visible. He first had to edge himself slowly around the door frame, very carefully, of course, if he did not want to fall awkwardly on his back, right at the entrance into the room. He was still preoccupied with this difficult movement and had no time to pay attention to anything else. When he heard the manager exclaim aloud, "Oh," it sounded like the wind whistling. And now he saw him, nearest to the door, pressing his hand against his open mouth and moving slowly back, as if an invisible constant force were pushing him away. His mother, in spite of the presence of the manager, she was standing here with her hair sticking up on end, still a mess from the night, first looked at his father with her hands clasped, then went 2 steps towards Gregor and collapsed right in the middle of her skirts, which were all spread out all around her, her face sunk on her breast, completely concealed. His father clenched his fist with a hostile expression, then looked uncertainly around the living room, covered his eyes with his hands, and cried so that his mighty breast shook. At this point, Gregor had still not taken 1 step into the room. He was leaning his body from the inside against the firmly bolted wing of the door, so that only half his body was visible, as well as his head, tilted sideways, with which he peeped over the others. Meanwhile, it had become much brighter. Standing out clearly from the other side of the street was a section of the endless grey-black house situated opposite. It was a hospital, with its severe, regular windows breaking up the facade. The rain was still coming down, but only in large individual drops, visibly and firmly thrown down, one by one, onto the ground. Countless breakfast dishes were standing piled around on the table, because for his father, breakfast was the most important mealtime in the day, one which he prolonged for hours by reading various newspapers. Directly across on the opposite wall hung a photograph of Gregor from the time of his military service. It was a picture of him as a lieutenant, smiling and worry-free, with his hand on his sword. He demanded respect for his bearing and uniform. The door to the hall was ajar, and since the door to the apartment was also open, you could see out into the landing of the apartment and the start of the staircase going down. "Now," said Gregor, well aware that he was the only one who had kept his composure, "I'll get dressed right away, pack up the collection of samples and set off. You'll allow me to set out on my way, will you not? You see, Mr. Manager, I am not pig-headed, and I am happy to work. Traveling is exhausting, but I couldn't live without it. Where are you going, Mr. Manager? To the office? Really? Will you report everything truthfully? A person can be incapable of work momentarily. That's precisely the best time to remember the earlier achievements and to consider that later, after the obstacles have been removed, the person will certainly work all the more diligently and intensely. I'm really so indebted to you, Mr. Chief. You know that perfectly well. On the other hand, I'm concerned about my parents and my sister. I'm in a fix, but I'll work myself out of it again. Don't make things more difficult for me than they already are. Speak up on my behalf in the office. People don't like traveling salesmen. I know that. People think they earn pots of money and thus lead a fine life. People never have any reason to think through this judgment more clearly. But you, Mr. Manager, you have a better perspective on what's involved than other people. even, I tell you in total confidence, a better perspective than Mr. Chief himself, who in his capacity as the employer may easily shade his decisions at the expense of an employee. You also know well enough that the traveling salesman, who is outside the office almost the entire year, can become so easily a victim of gossip, coincidences, and groundless complaints, against which it is totally impossible for him to defend himself. For the most part, he doesn't hear about them at all. And if he does, it's only when he's at home and exhausted after finishing a trip. Then he gets to feel, in his own body, the nasty consequences, which can't be thoroughly traced back to their origins. Mr. Manager, don't leave without speaking a word indicating to me that you will at least concede that I'm a little in the right. But at Gregor's first words, the manager had already turned away. And now he looks back with pursed lips at Gregor over his twitching shoulders. During Gregor's speech, he had not been still for a moment, but had kept moving away towards the door, without taking his eyes off Gregor, but really gradually, as if there were a secret ban on leaving the room. He was already in the hall, and given the sudden movement with which he finally pulled his foot out of the living room, you could have believed that he had just burned his soul. In the hall, however, he stretched his right hand out, away from his body, towards the staircase, as if some almost supernatural relief was waiting for him there. Gregor realized that he must not, under any circumstances, allow the manager to go away in this frame of mind, if his position in the firm was not to be placed in the greatest danger. His parents did not understand all this very well. Over the long years, they had developed the conviction that Gregor was set up for life in this firm. And in addition, they had so much to do nowadays with their present troubles that all foresight was foreign to them. But Gregor had this foresight. The manager must be detained, calmed down, convinced, and finally won over. The future of Gregor and his family really depended on it. If only his sister had been there. She was clever. She had already cried while Gregor was still lying quietly on his back. And the manager, always a friend of the ladies, would certainly let himself be guided by her. She would have closed the door to the apartment and talked him out of his fright in the hall. But his sister was not even there. Gregor had to deal with it himself. Without thinking that, as yet, he did not know anything about his present ability to move, and without thinking that his speech, possibly, indeed probably, had once again not been understood, he left the wing of the door, pushed himself through the opening, and tried to go over to the manager, who was already holding the handrail on the landing tight, gripping with both hands in a ridiculous way. But as Gregor looked for something to steady himself, with a small scream, he immediately fell down onto his numerous little legs. Scarcely had this happened when he felt for the first time that morning a general physical well-being. The small limbs had firm floor under them. They obeyed perfectly, as he noticed to his joy, and even strove to carry him forward in the direction he wanted. Right away he believed that the final amelioration of all his suffering was immediately at hand. But at the very moment when he lay on the floor, rocking in a restrained manner, quite close to and directly across from his mother, who seemed to have totally sunk into herself, she suddenly sprang up, with her arms spread far apart and her fingers extended, and cried out, "Help, for God's sake, help." She held her head bowed down, as if she wanted to view Gregor better, but then she ran senselessly back, contradicting that gesture, forgetting that behind her stood the table with all the dishes on it. When she reached the table, she sat down heavily on it, as if absent-mindedly, and did not appear to notice at all that next to her coffee was pouring out onto the carpet in a full stream from the large overturned pot. "Mother, mother," said Gregor quietly, and looked over towards her. The manager had momentarily vanished completely from his mind. On the other hand, when he saw the flowing coffee, Gregor could not stop himself snapping his jaws in the air a few times. At that, his mother screamed all over again, hurried from the table, and collapsed into the arms of his father, who was rushing towards her. But Gregor had no time right now for his parents. The manager was already on the staircase. With his chin on the banister, the manager looked back for the last time. Gregor made a running start to catch up to him if possible. But the manager must have suspected something, because he made a leap down over a few stairs and disappeared, still shouting, "Ah!" The sound echoed throughout the entire stairwell. Unfortunately, this flight of the manager seemed to bewilder his father completely. Earlier, he had been relatively calm. Now, instead of running after the manager himself, or at least not hindering Gregor from his pursuit, with his right hand, he grabbed hold of the cane that the manager had left behind on a chair with his hat and overcoat. With his left hand, the father grabbed a large newspaper from the table, and stamping his feet on the floor, he set out to drive Gregor back into his room by waving the cane and the newspaper. No request of Gregor's was of any use. No request would even be understood. No matter how willing he was to turn his head respectfully, his father just stomped all the harder with his feet. Across the room from them, his mother had opened a window, in spite of the cool weather, and leaning out with her hands on her cheeks, she pushed her face far outside the window. Between the lane and the stairwell, a strong draft came up. The curtains on the window fell around. The newspaper on the table rustled, and individual sheets fluttered down over the floor. His father relentlessly pushed his way forward, hissing like a wild man. Now Gregor still had no practice at all in going backwards. It was really very slow going. If Gregor only had been allowed to turn himself around, he would have been in his room right away. But he was afraid to make his father impatient by the time-consuming process of turning around. And each moment he faced the threat of a mortal blow on his back or his head from the cane in his father's hand. Finally, Gregor had no other option, for he noticed with horror that he did not understand yet how to maintain his direction going backwards. And so he began, amid constantly anxious sideways glances in his father's direction, to turn himself around as quickly as possible, although in truth, he could only do this very slowly. Perhaps his father noticed his good intentions, for he did not disrupt Gregor in this motion, but with the tip of the cane from a distance, he even directed Gregor's rotating movement now and then. If only his father had not hissed so unbearably. Because of that, Gregor totally lost his head. He was already almost totally turned round when, always with this hissing in his ear, he just made a mistake and turned himself back a little. But when he was finally successful in getting his head in front of the door opening, it became clear that his body was too wide to go through any further. Naturally, his father, in his present mental state, had no idea of, say, opening the other wing of the door a bit to create a suitable passage for Gregor to get through. His single fixed thought was that Gregor must get into his room as quickly as possible. He would never have allowed the elaborate preparations Gregor required to raise himself up and perhaps in this way get through the door. Perhaps with his excessive noise, he was now driving Gregor forwards as if there was no obstacle. Behind Gregor, the sound at this point was no longer like the voice of only a single father. Now it was really no longer a joke, and Gregor forced himself, come what might, into the doorway. One side of his body lifted up. He lay at an angle in the door opening. His one flank was all raw from the scraping. On the white door, ugly blotches were left. Soon he was stuck fast and would not have been able to move any more on his own. The tiny legs on one side hung twitching in the air above, and the ones on the other side were pushed painfully into the floor. Then his father gave him one really strong, liberating push from behind, and he scurried, bleeding severely, far into his room. The door was slammed shut with a cane, and then finally, It was quiet.